This podcast was brought to you by withaim.co.
Welcome back to Vanishing Shadows. In the last episode,
there's money here, a plane ticket, and my friend's contact details. Start your life over, Lee, and forget you ever knew Carter Sumner or my wife. I take the envelope, because if I don't, if I refuse to go quietly, he will dispose of me, like he did Jesse. You'll never hear from me again, I say as I stand. I promise you that. I walk briskly back to my car, eyes forward, shoulders squared. It is only when I reach for the door handle that I realize I am shaking. After months on the street, feeling hopeless and afraid, I suddenly have options. I have money, 2 plane tickets, and a job waiting for me. I can rebuild my life as Lee Gulliver, or I can start a new one as Kelly Wilcox. It is a heady feeling, both exciting and terrifying. My escape is so close, but I am not free or safe yet. And I am not sure who to trust, Hazel or her husband. I park my car at a meter and slide my finger under the flap of Benjamin Laval's envelope. Inside, I find a flight itinerary, a direct flight to Austin, leaving tonight. It's just a 4-hour journey, nonstop to a new life. There is a stack of money there too, $100 bills. Glancing around to ensure no one is watching me, I thumb through them. $25,000. With the money from Hazel, I have $75,000. It's a lot. Enough to rebuild. Almost enough to repay my debt to Damon, if he found me. Shoving the envelope into the canvas bag, I get out of the car and slip into the familiar cafe. I pay at the counter, then head directly to my computer. This place feels comfortable now, but it will be the last time I visit. Because while my destination may be unknown, I know I can't stay in Seattle. My freedom, even my life, is in jeopardy here. I have promised to disappear, and I plan to. My first online search is the restaurant in Austin. It is indeed successful, well-known, and probably a good opportunity for me. I could regain some semblance of my old life, reestablish a relationship with my family. Teresa wants nothing to do with me, but one day Clark will betray her again. He'll have another affair, and then she will need me. But if I go to Texas, Benjamin Laval will keep tabs on me. He'll make sure I keep my mouth shut. And if he ever needs to, he will send me down for Jesse's murder. If the body ever resurfaces, or Sean Sumner reports his brother's murder, Benjamin will come for me. As long as that man knows where I am, I will never stop looking over my shoulder. My next search is Panama. I know little about the country except for its famous shipping canal and what Hazel told me. That it's the perfect place to hide from the past, to use cash to start your life over. I learn that the Central American country is located on an isthmus, the bridge of land that connects North and South America. It is bordered by Costa Rica to the west and Colombia to the southeast. The Caribbean Sea touches the north coast, and to the south, the Pacific Ocean. It is beautiful and prosperous and culturally vibrant. Obviously, I can't fly into a foreign country with a bag full of cash, but I've noticed Bitcoin ATMs scattered around the city, and setting up an online crypto wallet only takes me a few minutes. If I choose this plan, I can deposit my cash at an ATM here and claim it when I get to Panama. And then I can start my life over. Get a job at a restaurant in Panama City or open my own place. Maybe build a little fish shack on the Caribbean. Thanks to Hazel and Benjamin, I have enough money now. But Hazel will know where I am. Know that I am living as Kelly Wilcox. And Hazel Laval can't be trusted. She is capable of having her husband murdered and setting me up for it. So who do I fear the most? Which life is the safest? Or do I start over on my own terms? Take this money and build a brand new life somewhere else? A seaside village in Scotland? a stylish arrondissement in Paris, a funky neighborhood in Berlin. Jesse's journal and pen are still in my canvas bag. I dig them out and open the notebook full of exercise programs. And then I bring up my flight options. If I choose Panama, when can I leave? It is a long flight, over 11 hours. But the distance makes me feel safer. I write down the first flight, leaving tonight, with a 3-hour stop in Houston. It departs just after the Austin flight. My next option is not until tomorrow. If I spend one more night at the motel, will I be safe? As I peruse another travel site, Jesse's pen rolls off the table and lands with a heavy clunk. Reaching down to retrieve it, I realize it is broken. The top half completely severed from the bottom. Picking up the two pieces, I notice that one half of the pen contains a USB stick. I have never seen this before. A working pen with a concealed thumb drive. But it's probably not that unusual. Out of curiosity, I plug the storage device into the computer. I'm expecting more exercise routines, maybe a nutrition schedule. But two audio files pop up. They are labeled simply Tape 1 and Tape 2. My brow furrows as I inspect the pen further. It's an actual pen, but I notice a small microphone embedded in it, and the clip is an on/off switch. I have heard of these covert recording devices, these spy gadgets. They are sometimes marketed to students to record class lectures, but they're perfect for surreptitious taping. So what and who had Jesse recorded? I need to listen to these files, but not here, not in public. I need headphones. There were a pair in my trunk at one point, but I haven't seen them since my iPhone was stolen. And would they be compatible with this computer? Scanning the room, I see a guy seated near the door, wearing earbuds plugged into the desktop. With the canvas bag in hand, I approach him. "Excuse me?" I tap the desk to get his attention. His eyes dart up to me and he quickly closes his on-screen window. Whatever he was perusing, porn probably, he doesn't want me to see it.
"Yeah?"
He's instantly wary of me, and for good reason. My clothes are worn and rumpled. Despite the night at the hotel, I am exhausted, wearing my stress and fear on my face. "Can I borrow your earbuds? I'll give you $50. He snorts.
"You serious?"
"I only need them for a few minutes, half an hour at the most."
"I'm using them,"
he says, clocking my desperation.
"Make it 100.
"Fine." I fish in the canvas bag and remove 250s.
"I should have asked for more,"
he mutters, as he unplugs the cord and hands them over. He could have asked for $200, $300, even $500. I am that curious. I am that desperate. Back at the computer, my hands fumble to plug the headphone jack into the socket. Wiping the earbuds vigorously on my shirt, I insert them into my ears. And then I hit play on the first audio recording. Within seconds, I wish I hadn't. Because what I am hearing makes my blood run cold and my stomach churn. I am listening to a crime being committed. And in the thick of it, Jesse's voice is clear, concise, and inhuman. I realize this is not Jesse at all. This is Carter Sumner, the criminal who beat an elderly man for no reason. The defendant who sent his brother to jail for his own actions. Carter was a sociopath, a monster, a master manipulator. Jesse never existed. Hazel didn't know him any better than I did. With a trembling hand, I click on the second audio file. It is just as heartless, just as gruesome. I keep listening as a sharp pain stabs my temple, the circuitry of my brain overloading with the cold-blooded violence I am exposed to. Why did Carter record this? It incriminates him, but not only him. And I realize this was insurance. Because Carter's voice is not the only one captured here. Now I know that I am in greater danger than I ever realized.
Even with Carter gone, I am not safe. Because the other voice is that of a murderer too. And if that person finds out I've heard these recordings, I will be killed. Removing the earbuds, I try to steady my breathing, to calm my fluttering heart. But my body feels beyond my control. Nerves tingling, pulse racing, limbs paralyzed by the shock of what I have just witnessed. Everything I thought I knew is wrong. Everyone I know has lied to me. And I have brushed up against pure evil. But if I leave now, right now, I can save myself. There is no time for strategy or analysis. Forcing myself to move, I drop the thumb drive into my bag. Then I return the earbuds and hurry out of the cafe. In my car, I lock all the doors and pull onto the street, my tires chirping on the pavement. My eyes dart to the rearview mirror, afraid that I am being followed, terrified that someone will realize what I have just heard. The thumb drive in my bag feels like a bomb, a beacon, a grenade. I must get rid of it, fast, get it out of my possession. But what I do with it will affect so many people, change their lives forever. And it will change mine. Because there is one thing I have gained clarity on. There is no one I can trust.
If you want to listen to the entire part 3 of this story, sign up on Apple Podcasts and experience the full magic of this captivating tale.